Coming to you from Los Angeles, California, this is Cheat Day Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Cheat Day. This is Frankie, gender pronouns, he, him, his. And I am sitting across from the lovely...
Kristen in the house.
Yeah.
I am in the house. Gender pronouns, she, her, hers.
All right. How are you doing, Kristen?
I'm doing pretty good. It was a slow start to the morning, but I'm here, I'm present, I'm ready to go.
Okay. Queer. We're here and we're queer.
We're here and we're queer. Get used to it.
All right. So what do you have going on? How was your week?
Oh, God. My week was crazy. I was preparing to go on vacation.
Right.
So it was a lot of like trying to tie up loose ends while they were all unraveling simultaneously. Something about leaving just makes everybody go crazy.
Yeah.
And you don't want to leave a bunch of work for the people that have to cover your ass while you are gone. So,
AKA me.
That's right. That's right.
So you've had to do many things in order to prepare for this trip.
Uh-huh.
What are some of those things that you've had to do to prepare?
I had to get waxed.
Okay. Yeah, that's always an interesting experience, right? Not that I don't have to undergo that, but...
Yeah, I get waxed for special occasions. Okay. I was getting waxed regularly, but that shit fucking hurts.
Full Brazilian?
Full Brazilian, front to back, gone.
Okay.
Kelly, my waxer, she's great.
Yeah.
She, aside from my husband and, well, as far as like recently, my husband and Kelly are the only two people to see my vagina. So it's a very intimate situation.
Very.
Very. But yeah, I got waxed for the trip. And yeah, it was like lots of baby powder.
Oh, okay. Well, I think it's always interesting, you know, the women, and I haven't heard of any men doing that job, but the number of vaginas that they've seen and booty holes.
Yeah. Oh God.
Vaginas
yeah.
and booty holes.
All day long.
They write
all
a
day,
book. It should be called Vaginas and Booty Holes.
Okay.
That to them is like, here's another one.
Just another day in the life.
Yeah.
Kelly the waxer.
Yeah.
Yeah. She actually won't do men.
Oh, really?
Because my husband was getting his arms waxed.
Yeah.
And when I first initially was like, will you wax my husband? She's like, oh, no. We don't do the junk.
Well, I can't think. I know it's painful for everybody.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure if you were to wax your balls, it would be really...
Would it like rip the skin off?
I don't even want to think about it.
Right?
I don't even want to think about it. But yeah, it can be pleasant.
You know, you can do like little shapes, like the runway, or like you can get like a little heart.
An arrow.
An arrow.
For those who have a difficult time finding it.
Okay.
Yeah. What is it called? It's like bedazzle, but what for the vagine?
Oh, yes. Oh, God, what is her name?
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Ice-T's wife.
Coco.
She did like a whole like beauty day, and getting her vagina bedazzled was one of the things that she did.
Is that still a thing though?
It's totally still a thing.
Okay.
Mine, I'm not trying to bedazzle my vagina. She's chubby. She's a chubby lady. She's a chubby lady.
Speaking
what?
Of chubby vaginas,
yeah,
you know, because as we usually do,
right?
There's this thing online about a fupa,
okay,
which is like the area on the top that's a little chubby.
Uh-huh.
That's called a fupa.
Oh, Mama has a fupa.
Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Okay,
Mama is fupa'd up. Full of fupa.
I don't know what it stands for, but
it sounds like something like an older Jewish woman would call her vagina if she was going to reference it.
My fupa.
My fupa.
Yeah. Ave.
Exactly. Okay. The good old fupa.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. How was your week?
It was good.
Okay.
It was long.
Yeah.
Lots of work.
Yeah.
But I'm excited for the weekend.
Yes.
And I'm excited to be here. And I'm excited to talk fashion.
Yes.
With our guest that's coming up soon. Yeah. And I have a vacation in about a week.
Nice.
So I'm excited for that too. So I just have to make it through this week and 2 days of the week after that. And then I'm golden. I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going to stay home.
A little staycation.
Because, you know, I don't like planes or trains or automobiles. Okay. Isn't that a movie?
It is.
Okay. Yeah.
John Candy and Tom Hanks.
I don't know.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do actually, I lie. I do like trains and automobiles, but I don't like planes.
I hear you.
So, for many reasons. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I'm just going to stay home. Probably make a lasagna. And watch some Netflix.
Nice glass of wine, coffee in the morning, both hands.
Garlic bread, throwing it back to last week.
You know, speaking of planes, I get on these kicks with like YouTube where like for the longest time I was watching all videos around RV tours.
Oh.
And lately I've been watching like luxury flying videos.
Oh, wow.
Like private jets. Like there are condos in the sky. Yeah. Like full blown seats that turn into beds.
That's amazing.
You have a mini bar in your
room.
Okay.
I mean, I can travel like that.
I want to travel like that. Yeah. Like the seats are huge.
Okay.
I'm a fan.
That's important.
But I mean, they're like $2,000 to $4,000 tickets.
Yeah.
We're not making that fuck
not
you money
there
yet.
Not there yet.
But we will.
Yeah.
And when we do.
I'm going to Dubai, baby.
Okay. Emirates.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And like you everything. Have like your own private butler.
Yeah. I want my own private camel.
Okay. On the plane?
On the plane.
Okay.
So, no, if I'm going to Dubai, I'm just going to bring my own camel.
We're gonna bring my camel.
I don't do rented camels. Okay. Thank you very much. I have my own.
Have my own camel.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay, so shall we start this interview, mamas?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
All right, you guys, on today's Cheat Day podcast, please help us welcome our guest, Kat Jones.
Yes. That would be me.
Yes, and Shiva.
Hi.
Yes.
Hello,
yes,
hello.
Yes.
I'm so excited to be here. I'm so excited.
We're
to be
excited
here.
To have y'all.
Me too.
Thank
this
you.
Is fabulous.
Yeah. We work with Kat. We all work together.
Yes. Fabulous coworkers.
Fabulous coworkers. And you and Shiva work together.
Yes, we do.
Just to say, Kat started a brand, a fashion brand.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
Called Nicole Wilson.
Yes.
Okay. And we're going to talk fashion today.
Yes. Let's talk fashion.
Many things.
And all the things.
All of the things.
All the things. So let's get this party started. Let's just go right into it.
I'm here for it.
I wanted to know, we wanted to know, when did you create your first piece?
Ooh, my first piece. Back in, it was around 2015. I was working full time. Didn't really have a lot of experience with like sketching or designing or anything, like no formal training with that. And I was just exploring like what fabrics I wanted to work with and like what I wanted to do and like how I wanted that to look. So the first pieces were really simple. Like they weren't too complex. Like I felt like I was working with a pattern maker that I had found in downtown LA. And I had found some fabrics that I liked in Ashanti Fabrics, which is a store in downtown LA. I picked up those pieces and I picked up the fabric and I was like, okay, I want to use this for my shirt. And they were pretty simple. It was, you know, like I might have added like the fabric on the collar and then the rest of the shirt would have been like linen or something like that. But it was pretty simple. So, yeah.
How did you even... So you don't have any formal training?
No formal training.
So you had to teach yourself?
Yes.
How do you even go about that? Because I mean, I love fashion, but I can't make anything.
No, I am not skilled at physically making the pieces. I feel like I'm learning a lot as I'm going along, and I feel like that's definitely where, you know, Shiva comes in. Like the majority, like she does all of the sewing, like all the pieces that you see. She does all of that. So I feel like, you know, you should probably speak to that. Like the internet. Use the internet for a lot of this stuff. Like learning, okay, so what does, like what I did the first time was I took the fabrics and I took the sketches that I had, and I took it to the pattern maker in downtown LA, and I was like, okay, here, make it. And then she said, okay, no, 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 that's not, that's not how it works. We're not going to do this right now. You're going to go home and you're going to, you know, figure out the measurements. You need to measure the front, the back, the sleeves, like all these different parts. And I was like, oh my God, I had no idea how to do any of that. So it was a lot of learning from her, actually. And then I had another friend who worked for this boutique, and she kind of told me, as far as like the business end, okay, if you want to do like an LLC or if you want to do manufacturing, like what does that look like? And so it was just a lot of me like searching online, like, okay, so what is a manufacturer? What do they do? And, you know, how could I do that? So I think I used one of those websites that like does everything for you, or I was gonna use one of those websites that does everything for you. Like they source the fabric for you, they do the patterns, they do the sampling, but I wouldn't have done any of that. Like I wouldn't have been a part of that process. Right. So, and it was stupid expensive. It wasn't worth it. So I think me trying to learn on my own as I go helped me. Mm-hmm. And I'm still learning. Like there's so many things that I'm still like figuring out how to do. And there's so many things that I still don't know how to do. So it's been a learning process like the entire time, literally up until today, like learning different things because we're working on another collection right now. And so, you know, just from what Shiva will tell me, I'm learning different things. Just from like the videos that we watch, like I'm learning the language, I'm learning like the vocabulary, and it's challenging.
Yeah.
It's a whole nother world out there. Yeah.
So Shiva, yeah. You have formal training?
No, I don't.
Okay. You also taught yourself?
Yes. It was a bit based out of necessity and creativity. I really like fashion and I like odd shapes and silhouettes and fabrics. And growing up, there was not a lot of money, and but there was a sewing machine and there was a will to, I just love expressing myself through clothing and accessories and colors. And I feel a bit different all the time, so it's normal that I look different. And so it was a case of finding things in thrift shops or hand-me-downs. And also my shape was different. I didn't look like what the body is to put, what the things that you buy in stores is made for. And nor did I want to be honest. And so it was a case of changing and making it work for me, for my body type, but also for my aesthetic. So it was perfect. And I got a sewing machine once for Christmas, and I just got into it and really enjoyed creating it and experimenting with it, and you know, falling in love with fabrics and making it work. And I also always loved fashion. I always loved the haute couture aspect of it. The crazy, wild, unwearable,
avant-garde.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I always loved that. And I used to watch it all day, have it on the background of the house. And so it came from like necessity and creativity for clothing and for expression. I'm really pleased with the outcome. And every day I do learn more. And Kat and me have very different aesthetics and very different looks. I think she has a line that is a lot more clean. And sometimes I want to go a little bit more wild. And I think it's beautiful the work that we've been able to create together. She comes up with a lot of ideas, but I have to execute them. So it's about finding a happy place in the middle that expresses both of our aesthetic and ideas and creativity.
Great. Were you working in fashion prior to Nicole Wilson, or is this?
I originally come from Portugal, and I worked for H&M for about 8 years. I was a visual merchandiser. So you get a lot involved in, they have fantastic training programs, and it's not just about putting stores on the rack and selling them. They have a fantastic philosophy, of expression. One of them, not to publicize the brands, but one of them is they really want you to wear the brand because they believe that everybody on staff is different, and they want you to prove that you can wear your personality. and they really pushed for that. And they show you a lot of manufacturing, how fabric comes from, how it comes together. And the aspect of being a visual merchandiser, it's about creating a brand, a visual, an expression. Even in a big brand that is worldwide, but creating individuality within that. And that really taught me a lot about that and about ethics of work and expression.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love that. It's so inspiring, you know, just like being a plus size woman to hear all of that because, you know, we all want to express ourselves. And I know you've done some plus size stuff.
Right,
like
right.
You're more all inclusive with your sizing.
Yeah.
You want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So with the... part of the first collection that I did, what actually prompted me to start thinking about plus size was the show Dapper Q that I did last year in New York. What I really liked about Dapper Q was that they are very inclusive and that they make sure that they're representing everybody. And so it's not like one specific size, body shape, you know, ethnicity, whatever, it's inclusive of everybody. And so one of the requirements for the show was that you had to make sure that, you know, number one, all of your models look different and that they're not like everybody is the same. You know, there's different personalities, different shapes, different sizes, all of that. And so I know that a lot of the times designers don't really think about that. They might want to do that, but then they're not sure like how to execute it or... I don't know if I want to spend that much time doing it, but even, you know, you thinking about it that way, like that's not okay. And so one of the requirements was definitely to make sure that you had, you know, a wide range of sizes in your runway. And so that's when I started thinking about, okay, cool. So like what kind of pieces can I make that highlights different body sizes? And so that was really cool. It was really, really awesome to be able to see, you know, I had two women on the runway wearing plus size pieces and they were beautiful. They looked amazing. And so it's totally possible. It's not it's not like this, oh my God, like, you know, how am I going to wake? It's totally doable. It's whether you want to or not. And I think that's, you know, that's a completely different discussion. But I definitely, you know, make sure that I keep that in mind with everything that I do and making sure that my pieces are versatile for everybody to be able to wear. You know, it doesn't matter who you are, what your expression is, what your gender is. I think at the bottom of everything, like that's the main focus for my collection. So yeah.
If I may, I think now fashion, and it's not now, it always has had that need, but I think now it's a bit more visible or more people have more visibility. I think that people's needs need to be heard. And like I was saying about me simply wanting different shapes and different colors and different materials, we shouldn't be a small percentage. We should be part of that group of customers like everybody else. Right. And actually it's quite, from a creative point of view, it's quite limitative of yourself to only do for one body type. Mm-hmm. I understand, yes, you need to take other things in consideration when it comes to fabric silhouettes and how fabric falls on a person. But creatively, I think it's actually quite limitative. It's like a painter only using one type of paint or only using one type of canvas. Creatively, it's kind of putting a limit to yourself. And I find it extremely rewarding to see that runway and to see all types of people, shade, sexuality, expression, body types. It made me feel extremely proud. And I didn't feel like I did anything special. I feel like that's kind of my job.
It wasn't like, oh, well, we're making an exception.
Yes.
Like right. it's not about that. It's giving them the representation that they deserve, mm-hmm. and putting them out there for the world to see because they deserve to be seen like everybody else. Like there's no special difference. It's just a sizing difference. That's it. And you make it work.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great. And I also think that within the sort of mainstream fashion industry, mm-hmm. that seems quite radical.
Right.
To like showcase other bodies, because for so long it has been that, people have been marginalized, mm-hmm. and a lot of designers blame, or not blame it, but they use the excuse that they have a vision, mm-hmm. and this vision is this type of body. Okay, right. Like whatever. Like if you can't design for people of different sizes, like what kind of creator
exactly.
are you?
Right. Like why are you in the business?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, and I think that it is definitely changing, and I think social media has had a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
Especially for like women's wear, I think it's definitely it has moved forward a lot.
Absolutely.
Men's wear, that's a different ball game. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But hopefully there will be other designers and creators just like yourself who are trying to make a difference and just be able to meet the needs, like you were saying,
right.
of everybody who wants to wear, who wants to express themselves through their clothing.
I also find it unbelievable to see that plus size, which I hate that term.
Yeah.
I don't even know where it exists. It's mm-hmm. size is so much more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
It's in a lot of cases, double the price.
Yep.
Yeah.
I find it ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I find it unacceptable, to be very honest, that you would do that to people. When you buy a pair of shoes, if you're a size 4 or 5, you don't pay less money or more money if you're a bigger right. size.
Correct.
So it
Correct.
Makes absolutely no sense. It's a piece of cloth. Get over it. Just resize it. Do better. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's your job.
Do better.
Do yes. better. Boom. Yes, better. Absolutely.
Boom.
Walk away. Nothing else needs to be said.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to go back to when you started. Like, what? Because I don't know what you were doing in 2015, but mm-hmm. what changed for you that propelled you forward to want to start?
Well, I've always been somewhat in the realm of like art, whether it was photography, like doing that on my own because I just wanted to, you know, pick up a camera and get out of the house and take pictures. And then that developed into, okay, maybe I can make some money off of this and maybe I can take pictures of other people and maybe they'll like it. And so that can be like another gig. Or just like always having like a GQ magazine in my house. And like, even when I was in college, like I would tear out the pictures of the magazine and like put them all over, you know, the walls in my dorm and just like be into fashion, but not really, like I never had any connections to it. Like I didn't have, you know, anybody who was like, oh yeah, I'm a designer. I know this person. Let me connect you to that person. So I never saw myself as like a designer. And I've always been in like the realm of mental health. I've done that for many, many, many years. And I felt like, you know, I love this. This is what I'm great at. I want to just pursue this. You know, I even considered going back to school to get my master's, but then I was like, that's a really big commitment and I'm not passionate about it enough to that, like to commit $60,000 or $100,000 okay. to something that I'm not passionate about.
Okay.
I can't do it. I can't write that check. I can't do it. So, and I remember I was sitting at my cubicle and I just remembered feeling like, I'm not satisfied with my life right now. Like, this can't be it. Like, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. And that's when I started exploring, like, okay, well, what else can I do? And I was working with an old coworker of mine, trying to create, like, a more masculine-centered blog around fashion. And, you know, we started that together and brainstorming ideas, and then it kind of morphed into another idea that he wanted. And that wasn't really the direction that I wanted to go. And so I thought, like, why don't I create something for myself? And I remember that feeling of thinking, like, nah, I'm not gonna be able to, like, it's not gonna happen. Like, I can't do this. You know, I'm not seeing myself as a designer. I'm not seeing myself like everybody else that I see on Instagram or Facebook or like in the media. But I decided to go for it. And I'm really glad I did. I know sometimes, you know, I have those moments where I'm like, am I really doing this? Like, how far can I really take this? Or like, how far is it going to go? But yeah, it was just that moment where I was sitting down and I was just like, I probably was filling out paperwork or something. And I was like, I can't, this can't be it. This just can't be it. Like, I can't keep doing these notes and then clock out and then go home and then that's it. And then I wake up And I do this again every day. And I felt like because I was always in the arts to some degree, I didn't want to just stop that, you know, and I wasn't doing photography at the time because I didn't have time to do it. So I was like, well, what else can I do? And I've always been the type of person that's like doing something, you know, whether it was like photography or whether it was acting or whether it was, you know, drawing or singing or whatever. Like I wanted to continue to be in the arts and I figured, why not, you know, try something new. I've never done it before. I love it. It's a challenge. I love it, you know, and I want to push myself and be the best that I can be at that. So here I am, you know, a couple years later, you know.
We're grateful for that.
Yes. Thank you, Frankie.
Right?
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate you.
I appreciate you.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Okay.
I think it's important also that we were talking earlier about a bit of expression and I think I'm not trying to sound too old or too philosophical, but okay. I think that we all live very fast-paced lives. A lot of things are expected from us, our path, how we express ourselves, what we do, what are our goals. It's a bit kind of, it's really fast and it leaves very little place sometimes for creativity, imagination, or your own personal tone and voice. And it's very important that we listen to that voice that tells us, no, this is okay, I like this, but mm-hmm. I want something more, I want something different, or mm-hmm. I want something else. Like you guys having this podcast, you have your day job, if you mm-hmm. want to call it like that. We all do, but it's really important to give ourselves that personal voice. And it's not always easy and it's not always clear, and we might not have the education, we might have the funds, but it's extremely important that we don't suppress that voice, and that we give that space and accept that we're gonna fall and figure it out. And I think it shows immense strength to do that, and we should be proud of ourselves and you guys of yourselves for, you know, doing this.
Yeah, shout out to you, Kristen and Frankie.
Oh, thank you.
Shout out to y'all doing a damn thing.
Thank you. We are doing the damn thing. Yeah. And I totally agree as far as like fast paced mm-hmm. lives, and we do have our day jobs, but to leave that room for creativity. Mm-hmm. And you know, we don't always have the education or the knowledge, but that doesn't mean we can't acquire it.
Right. Exactly.
You mm-hmm. know, you don't necessarily have to go to school to acquire it.
Mm-hmm. That part.
There's this thing called the internets.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it has all the information. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I love that. I love that, you know, that you're crazy enough to think that you can make it.
Yeah.
And that you're putting in
That's
the footwork.
That's some crazy ass shit right now.
You're putting in the footwork.
That's crazy.
I mean, like, you kind of need one with the other.
Yeah.
You know, like, you really have to believe that what you're doing could be successful.
Right.
And so it's just so great to see, like, the confidence and the work that you're putting in. Because, you know, we work with young people and they often have dreams. And, you know, it's like we're not going to be walking down the street in Hollywood and be discovered. You know, it's like you really have to put yourself out there.
Right.
People have to get to know you. And there's so many ways of doing that these mm-hmm. days. So I'm super grateful. Podcast, stand-up comedy, fashion, Instagram, like all the things. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And I think also it's, you can't wait for the perfect moment because mm-hmm. it may never come.
Yeah.
So you just have to start doing it.
Yeah.
And every little thing that you do is another step that
Absolutely.
You take towards that.
Yeah, every day, you know, you wake up and you're like, okay, I'm gonna try and start it today, whatever it is. And then that day doesn't happen because, you know, sometimes I guess life gets in the way. And then the next day, okay, I'll start it today. And then the next day, and then you wake up, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years later and you haven't done anything. I don't want that regret. I really am not trying to go through that where I wake up and I'm like, damn, like I should have done that. Like that is one feeling that I don't want to have, especially with where I see my life going professionally.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still don't know where it's going to take me. Like, I don't know what's going to happen 2 weeks from now. I don't know what's going to happen, you know, a year from now, but I'm going to try. I'm going to wake up and I'm going to do it. I'm going to do whatever I can to make sure that I get where ultimately I see myself going. So yeah,
just do it,
you
just
know,
like Nike,
you know,
like Nike says.
Shout out to Nike.
Yeah, you
sponsorship
if you want to sponsor us, Nike,
hit me up.
We will wear those shoes.
Drop a DM real quick.
Wear the shit out of those shoes,
you know,
sportswear,
believe in me.
Okay, so I want to talk because I love the collection that you've created.
Thank you.
For many reasons. Mm-hmm. But I think fabric is such an important thing. Fabric can like make or break.
Yeah.
And you do prints, like your prints are incredible.
Thank you.
So I want to know what is that process like of selecting fabrics for a collection?
So you can obviously, if you wanted to share a little bit. Okay, go for it.
I think a big part of it, we do use a lot of African prints. And that's a bit, I don't want to call it a trademark because it's not mandatory. And it's exactly the opposite. It's not because it's mandatory, but there is a richness that comes from African prints, mm-hmm. that you cannot get from any other print. Mm-hmm. It has a history, a culture, a weight to it that, regardless of what you put to it, that piece, I think just, it adds an immense value. We use it not only because it is aesthetically beautiful, because it is, but I think, and Kat, I don't know, at some point maybe we can talk a bit more about the activism and the nonprofit part of the brand, but kind of, I can't have this conversation without tapping into that. I think we talk a lot about African prints or Africa in general, or multicultural, and it's almost an add-on, it's almost an extra, or it's being used in a cheaper way. And with the work that Kat does, and it's so important to her, it is a way to, it's not a charity work, it's not an add-on, it's not a little extra, it's in its all its glory and beauty, and it's the centerpiece of every piece. It's to give it its value, mm-hmm. Not just 10%, not just a little strip, but to give it its value and to give it its pride, right. in every single piece. And we usually start a lot with the African print, and then kind of build around it, or have a general idea, but we base ourselves a lot in what that print says to us and mean to us.
I think speaking on what Shiva said, it's more about highlighting and acknowledging. Mm-hmm. Like on my website, I'm working on and have a few posts where I'm talking about where some of the fabrics come from. Because yes, you see a lot of it right now, you know, with this quick turnover fashion, mm-hmm. where right now it's really hip to use anything that's African print, mm-hmm. anything that has like a tribal print on it. It's like, boom, let's use it, which is great. But it feels like they're using it not to highlight the culture, not to highlight, you know, the story behind this fabric or how it was even made, mm-hmm. But just because it looks cool and it looks current and it's trendy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm all for representation and I'm glad that it's, you know, getting the recognition. But I strive to, and I hope that I am like celebrating these fabrics, and giving them the platform that they deserve, not in a gimmicky kind of way.
Exactly.
Because I don't think that you need to have, I've seen certain pieces where you see a hoodie and you see these fabrics slapped on there and it's like, it really didn't need that. It really didn't. But because, you know, you want to have like this tribal African print sweater, you have that. But, you know, what kind of story are you telling behind it? Like, where did it come from? Why did you use that fabric? And so a lot of the fabrics that I've gotten, like I said, I use Ashanti fabrics a lot, but I try not to have that be the only place that I source my fabrics from. On my like trips abroad, I've gotten fabrics from, the African fabric shops district in London. What was the street?
It's Petticoat Lane Market.
Yeah, Petticoat. Get a lot of my fabrics out there. On my trip to Uganda, you know, that was really interesting. Like I remember driving from Kampala, which is like the main district, to like this small town in Mbara, and like we're driving on this road, there's only one road and there's a bunch of shops on each side where it's like you have a bunch of people selling chicken and, you know, like literally chicken on a stick, and they run up to your car, and like the minute you stop your car, roll down the window, people will come up to your window and be like, here, you want some chicken? Like, stick it in the door. Like, okay, all right.
I would love that.
You know, like some chicken. It's like the ultimate drive-thru. It's like, it's so convenient. Sodas, chickens, like chips, whatever. And so we stopped in Ambara, and there was like this tiny little booth where this lady was making this gown, like this dress. And then while she was making it, she had like racks of different African print fabric. And I remember like I was telling Jay, who I was with, like, let's stop. I want to check out, you know, what she has. And she didn't have a big selection. Like, she didn't have like this whole warehouse full of fabrics, but you can tell this is what she had. And I remember being able to like purchase a few of them, and each of them are so different. Like, I've never seen fabrics like that. And I think that's another thing. A lot of the stuff that you see, you know, in the industry now, not saying that, you know, there's anything wrong with it, but they're common. You know, you see kente cloth a lot, and there's a lot of richness and there's a lot of history behind that. But I think that there's so many other prints out there from so many other places around the world that deserve to be celebrated and deserve to be highlighted. So it means a lot to me to be able to, you know, take fabric that I got from this lady. You know, this is her business. You know, she's selling these dresses and she's using this fabric, and that's her business. And I'm supporting that while also being able to, you know, create something and celebrate it at the same time. So a lot of the fabrics that I get are either sourced, you know, internationally, or I get from African print shops in downtown LA. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
I love that.
Yeah. And I think it's what you said really resonates with me. It's a lot of the quick fashion or high street sort of turn things into a novelty.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, it's festival fashion.
It cheapens it.
Let's go to Coachella.
Yeah.
And, like that. And that's not what it's about.
Right.
And from what I know about you, you are very much a collector of things, and you look for special things.
Meaning
in items.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. I do too. I really feel like it's important what you were saying as far as like celebrating the culture, the history, the story, the people.
Right.
Right. And not just a gimmick.
Right.
You know, and so that's what your fashion does, is it celebrates the community, the people, the culture, the originality of it all.
Right.
I think that's beautiful.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And if you start to understand the fabric itself, I mean, using mud cloth when you see it on a cheap pillow and at whatever supermarket, I don't think people understand that originally mud cloth actually take months to be done, and it can only be collected from a certain type of mud that will stay on. And it's a layering on process that actually comes from Mali, for instance, because the mud there is strong, and that's the and you can differentiate. Differentiate where it comes from within the continent according to the shade of the mud. So that's why in Mali you will have a color that is darker, but then if you go up, it will be more of a redder kind of shade. Fabrics are hard to find, and in our website, there's a note that we don't have a huge quantity because fabric is not produced in big quantities. That's why also when we see the fabric be used in such a cheap and plastic way,
it hurts
because you see that fabric, if not mud cloth, any other one is made in small batches because that's how that shade of color was made. And so you don't have 50 billion gallons of it to make it. Sometimes it tells a story of two communities coming together, or a celebration that is happening during that time, or a wedding, or a union, or a war, or a fight. They have that history. And even more, when it is original fabric, it's actually written in the fabric where it comes from. So the fact that you can't even just read the label or give yourself the trouble to put that information in, I just think it cheapens it so much. It wouldn't go through our head to not claim where it comes from and the meaning of it. And I think people ever more want to do things with meaning, from what they consume in their food, to what they put on their back, to what they wear, and to give it value where it's due. I think it's extremely important. African fabric has already been robbed from Africa from its basis. If anybody, I don't know if anybody knows, if you guys know, but it's called, most big brands of African print are actually Dutch.
Yeah.
Because when they went centuries ago, they took that fabric and had the ideas, the prints, but then had it shipped and made with their machinery. And so that's why when you go now online or you're trying to purchase fabric, it all has a stamp. It's Dutch. Called Holland fabric. Yeah. Because centuries ago, that's when you research it, that's the actual name of the fabric. Because centuries ago, it was taken back. So we're going to have you make the prints. You're going to have you make the templates for it and the layout of it. But we're going to ship it to our country, have it done by our big machines. And then we're going to sell it back to you. And so the now centuries down the line for it to continue to happen so blatantly in these times, we just refuse to do that.
Yeah. That's it.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean,
I didn't know that history, and I do think it's really important. Like, I know I'm becoming more aware of, like, carbon footprint and there being more meaning in the things that I buy. Like, I don't want to just buy stuff. Like, you guys are not exploiting people, right?
Yeah.
For their ideas and their creativity. Like, again, you're really celebrating it. So I think that's important for people to know because I don't think everybody knows that. There's even a lot of things that I don't know,
right.
But we're putting light on it and we're bringing attention to it. And again, just having the conversation, is like the first step. You can't really change problems if you're not admitting that there is one.
Or just talking about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's important.
So, well, you touched a little bit on your activism. I want to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
Uganda.
Yes.
Yes. So do you want to touch on the work that you're doing?
So initially, when I decided to do the line, I was thinking about like, I want to have a clothing line. I want to create a fashion line. But I think I reminded myself, or I was thinking about, literally, where am I in this moment while I'm thinking about it? I'm at a nonprofit agency, so giving back to some degree or another is important. And I don't want to, or I didn't want to just rule that out and cancel that out, as part of my life. So I wanted to figure out, okay, well, how can I incorporate my desire to give back, to help a community, and still create this clothing line? So that's when I thought about, okay, well, I think that the queer community needs a lot of support when it comes to a multitude of things. And I was thinking about where we were in our time and, the rights that, we were given. We should have had a long time ago, but that's another story. And I started doing research on how could I support? Who could I support? And again, this is where the internet comes in. I was researching a lot of queer activism, global activism, and I came across Uganda and their situation that was happening at that time with the Kill the Gays Act initiative, which was basically a bold, blatant act to criminalize homosexuality. And if you were gay, if you were caught being gay or being a lesbian or bi or anything under the LGBTQ umbrella, then if you were a male, you would just be killed. Like if a cop saw you on the street and felt like, I think you're gay, you're dead. That's it. If you were a woman, you were repeatedly raped and you were ostracized by your family. And so your way of life was basically non-existent. If your family found out, they would out you to the police and that would be the end of your life. And so the fact that this was reaching such a level politically, where the government is saying this is what's happening, and it's so bold. Like there's no secret, behind closed doors, we're talking about this. No, they're going out into the streets and they're saying, listen, if you are gay, you're dead, because that's not okay. And so I was like, that's not okay. I don't like that at all. What's happening? Are people doing anything about this? I didn't know that much about it here in the States. So that made me wonder, okay, do other people know about this? I know there's a lot of global activism when it comes to things that are happening in Africa, but when it comes to our queer family, what are we doing about that? And so I came across an article in The Advocate, and Jaya Bang, who was an activist at the time, still is an activist, was heading that front to basically say, this is not okay. I am an openly queer lesbian woman, masculine, and I'm not hiding myself. I'm not going to disguise myself as this feminine straight person for anybody. I'm putting my life on the line. for my community if nobody else will. And so that spoke to me, you know, especially being a masculine of centered Black woman myself. I felt like, okay, I have to reach out to this person and I have to figure out like, okay, what can I do to help? And I remember emailing her and I was like, she's not gonna respond. Like, she's all the way in Uganda. Like, no. Like, I can't even get a response back from my boss about PTO time off. Like, and they're in the office next door. So I'm probably not getting a response from somebody all the way across the world. She ended up responding like a couple weeks later. And, you know, she was like, hey, thank you so much for reaching out. Like, I really appreciate that. You know, we don't really hear a lot of support from the US. So I think it's great that you're reaching out. This is what we're doing. And right now what she's doing is creating a community center out there, specifically for the LGBTQ community. So it's a community center in Lira, which is more rural than Kampala. Like, if you go, it's about a 5-hour drive from Kampala. Lira, there's not a lot going on. It's very small. But there is a large queer community out there. They're very low key, but that's the situation, for safety reasons. And so she's creating a community center out there so that doctors can actually help the people in the community. If you are queer, you still need to go to the doctors. You still need to get tested. You still need to have checkups. Like, that has nothing to do with anything. So you still need those support services. But when you are queer, you can't go to the general doctor because, oh, you're a lesbian. Oh, you're gay. Oh, okay, well, I need to out you. And that's going to be the it. That's going to be the end. And so basically creating a community of people who are allies for the queer community in Uganda, and supporting them, not only with health, but with just support groups in general, being safe able space. To, yeah, a safe space, you know, literally a safe space. So if you are being kicked out of your home because you are a lesbian, well, you have a place to go. You have people who can talk to you. You have people who have connections to the embassy, you know, if you need that support, if you need to leave or whatever that might look like, just support that we have here in the US. I know that we still have limitations here, but if you compare our situation to, you know, situation in Africa, you can't. It's like we're living like kings and queens out here. And so, yeah. So what I wanted to do was support that. And in, you know, every sale, you know, portion of our sales, like, we give directly to them. And I feel really good about that. Like, I correspond with her a lot. She's sent me emails over the course of the year saying, like, you know, the money that you send, this is what we've done with that. And so it's really, really cool. Like, I remember when I got my first email and she said, I didn't even send her that much money, you know, because when you're starting a clothing line, you know, your profits are not, if there's a such thing as a profit, you know, it's like you're not going to make money. But if I'm able to send whatever I have, I'm going to do that. And I've done that so many times. And when I got my first email, she was like, thank you so much for what you sent. Like, we had a trans activism group. And so she was able to have like people from the community who identified as trans come and be able to have like a support group and talk to other people and like be in connection with other trans people and be like, oh, I didn't know. Oh, okay, cool. So now you're building a community and you're building a support system where there was none before. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's the little things. And I feel like that's important. Like, even if the line isn't as successful as I want it to be, the fact that I did that, like, I'm good. You know, like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I know at the end of the day, I was able to do that. And I feel like as much as designing and seeing, you know, ideas come to life in the form of like a piece is important, being able to give back and support my community is like top notch. Like, I'm doing all of this so that they can have what they have, so that they can continue to support each other and have a space to go and, you know, hopefully get bigger and be able to have a huge community center. And yeah, there are some security risks that come with that, but starting somewhere. And so, yeah, I'm proud about that. I'm really proud about that.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
But you traveled to Uganda. Yes. Which, yes. I can't think of many people who would, who would know that people are being killed and then be like, okay, I'm just going to book my ticket right now.
I'm going to drop myself on over to the trenches. She was not happy, but she was happy about what I was doing and why I was going and 1000% supported it. But as far as safety, of course, I understood. Yeah. She was definitely like, well, because I went by myself. I didn't go with anybody else. And so I think that alone, every single person I talked to was like, why the hell are you going to this place where they will openly kill you if they find out you are gay by yourself for 2 weeks? And I was like, okay, well, I don't know, because I want to experience it. And so I kind of have like, I need to work on that. But that's another conversation. But sometimes I kind of dive into things and, you know, hindsight. You know, are you breathing right now? You do some breathing.
Don't get me wrong. I was incredibly proud. Yeah. Incredibly proud. But, you know, I've traveled my fair bit and Europe is nice. The States are nice. But I think there's other parts of the world that you cannot fathom how reality is. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you can read as much as you want about it. You can watch as many documentaries about it. The reality of it is completely different. Mm-hmm. And knowing that she was going to be in more rural areas, it's even if here to be queer is sometimes so dangerous and so many aggressions can happen, and to think that you're so far away, so many hours different, in the middle of nowhere, in a place that openly has that approach and attitude to queer people, and you clearly look very as much as a woman, but with a masculine identity, you walking around
tattoos,
with a person, everything,
you know, bald head.
I felt equally proud as fearful.
Yeah, it was. It was even from when I got to. Because I didn't have a direct flight. I had like a 5-hour layover in the airport in Ethiopia. And just from getting there, I got a lot of looks. Got a lot of like, what is this? Not like, who are you, but what is this? Because right. There's just a lot going on right now. Like, I'm seeing some features in your face, but you're bald, but your posture and your build is different. So that makes me really uncomfortable. Where are you going? And then getting on the plane that's going to, the final plane that I got on to go to Uganda was like an hour and a half flight. And everybody on that flight, I believe, was from Uganda. Maybe a sprinkle traveling, not from there. But the majority, mostly, you know, people from Uganda. And that was already intense. And so I'm like, okay, this is going to be a long 2 weeks. And just getting off of the plane and seeing everybody, it was just looks. It was a lot of looks. It was a lot of like, what is this? Who are you? And for a minute, I was like, oh my God, like, what's gonna happen? You know, like, am I gonna get snatched up? Like, is a police officer gonna come and say, come with me? And that's it. That's the end of that story. So yeah, there were many days where I was thinking about that. And I had a lot of people prior to going to Uganda tell me, like, you need to just wear long sleeves. Don't show any of your tattoos. Take off your earrings. Take off your jewelry. Blend in as much as possible. Damn near buy a dress if you need to. You know, so you don't, you know, cause a scene. And in my head, I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm really not going to do that. And I know that that probably sounds like insane to a lot of people. But my purpose for going on this trip is to connect with someone who is openly living their life. You know, like, I'm connecting with somebody who's already there, who is masculine, who's not changing their appearance for anybody. And they've been living there their entire life. So what does it look like for me to hide who I am when I'm trying to work with somebody to continue to exist how they choose to exist in this world?
And motivate them.
And motivate them. Like, I can't tell you, hey, continue to do great work, but I'm going to be here in my wig and my dress as feminine as possible, as feminine as possible, as to not disturb the locals. I'm not going to do that. Right. You know, like, we're going to walk this street together. We're both going to stand and look like some masculine folk and get some looks, and it's going to be awkward, but here we are, because this is the change that we're trying to create. Right. So that felt really good. I know, you know, for the most part, I didn't really get I didn't have anybody come up to me being aggressive or anything like that. I just got a lot of looks. I did. There was a situation that was pretty, pretty intense. While I was out there, they were having the queer film festival. And I was like, okay, I got to go to that. Like, you mean there's a queer, like, I didn't even think that that would even be possible to have. So this was their second go around. It was small. I think there was probably about maybe like 50 people at the festival. Undisclosed location, because it had to be, you know, obviously. And I remember the second day, they had this artist who was doing a campaign to spread the global human rights. So there is this bill that's printed up that's the human rights for humanity. And what he does is he goes around the world. I can't think of his name, so I'll have to get that to you guys. But he goes around the world and he tattoos a letter of the Bill of Rights to everyone, wherever he goes. He travels around the world and he does that. So there's like a small number of people left, and he went to Uganda. He went to this film festival, and he said, Saturday, we are going to, you know, tattoo. We have like 100 slots. So if you want to get a tattoo, show up at 2:00 and we'll give you a tattoo. And so that was really cool. You know, that whole experience being a part of people, you know, being around people who wanted to partake in something like that was really awesome. But the crazy part about it was, right after I got my tattoo done, I got there around 12 and I left at like 1:30. When I got back to the place that I was staying at, I got a post on Facebook that said the police just showed up and ended the event. And the reason why they ended the event was because they got a call that someone said that this was a gay event. So the cops had to break it up and basically shut down the entire thing, shut down the festival, wasn't going to continue. If it did, everybody was going to go to jail, and that was going to be it. And I just remember feeling like, damn, you know, like, it's reality. It was a reminder, you know. It was like, okay, in that moment, we were experiencing something that was really great and harmonious, and we're all like, yeah, like, we're here and we're making these changes. And then, boom, you're reminded, no, this is not okay. And where you're doing this, the cops are telling you it's not okay. And I don't want to say, like, a part of me, like, I wish I was there, you know, like, I wanted to see that. But then I'm also like, I'm glad that I wasn't there, because I don't know what would have happened, you know. So obviously my safety is important, but it was just a reminder, like, listen, like, I'm out here, I'm trying to connect to these people, but stuff is still going down literally as we speak. So it was just, again, another reminder of, like, that's why this work is important. I think a lot of people don't know. And I think sometimes, you know, maybe they may have an idea, but to go there and to experience it firsthand, I feel like was the best way. I didn't want it to be me just getting this information from Jay. I wanted to be able to, like, sit down in the same space that she sits down and experience the same things that she experiences, you know, where you have waiters who will not, you know, wait you because you're gay or you're lesbian. So you have to go get your own food, or you have to find another host that will assist you. I remember staying at a hotel when we were at a conference, and the lady behind the counter, she kept looking at me because I was asking for, you know, like, the breakfast, and she refused to assist me. She refused. And so I had to go back to the room, get Jay, because, you know, she spoke English, so it wasn't a matter of, like, a language barrier. So Jay had to come and basically tell her, can you get her some food? Like, and I respected it so much. I felt like Jay was like my older sister, because she just, like, stepped in. Because I was small. Jay is super tall, and she has a bigger build, and she's masculine. So I think a lot of people were like, I'm not going to mess with you. Like, I'm going to give you some looks, but I'm not, like, I can't really defend myself in this situation. So that kind of helped. But she, like, came in and assisted me and, like, helped me. And it was just weird. I'm like, wow, you're really not going to, like, I'm so nice. You know, I had the biggest smile on my face. I'm like, hi, I just want some tea and maybe, like, a little biscuit. Like, is that, can I get that? And she, yeah, I'm really not. Like, I'll sit in the corner. I'm not trying to bother anybody. But she was just, no, she refused to assist me. And even when Jay came, her look was like, I don't want to assist you either. But, you know, you're a local, so I guess. So it's like, I needed to experience that. I needed to see firsthand what this is like. Because if anything, that's going to, like, fuel me to continue the work that I'm doing. You know, like, it gives me even more of a reason to figure my stuff out and keep pushing with this line and get frustrated and want to walk away, but come back to it at some point and be like, all right, I got to continue to do this because of what I experienced. I don't want other people to experience. And I think what I experienced was only not even like a fraction of what everybody else goes through. So I got to keep going. So that was important. So I needed to go on that trip. I don't think it could have happened any other way. Yeah. I needed to be there and feel it and experience it the way I experienced it.
Yeah. Right. I think you touched on something that's important, which is, so oftentimes we find ourselves in this bubble, mm-hmm. right? And we talk about like the California bubble where we mm-hmm. we're not really aware of what's happening
yeah.
outside of here. And yes, we are not aware of the man who's tattooing everybody
yeah.
and other people who are doing amazing work
right.
around the world, which might feel isolated or small, mm-hmm. but in reality, those are the stepping stones to get to a big, a major place and right. bigger picture type of stuff.
Right.
So I think it's incredible that you're shedding light into what's going on in Uganda, because a lot of our brothers and sisters out there who are just going through it.
Yeah.
And we have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then when they see us and, you know, and obviously there's nothing wrong with us celebrating who we are every day. And, you know, when the summer rolls around and Pride is here and we're doing all those things, it's amazing and it's beautiful. And yeah, it's inspiring for others who may not be in that place, but I can only imagine, you know, like if I was in Lira and, you know, I'm gay and the environment that I'm living in right now, and I turn on the TV or, you know, I listen to the radio and I'm seeing everybody else just kind of like, you know, living great. Free. It's great, but it's like, damn, like, can y'all just see what's going on here and help? Like, help me, please. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know? I feel like if you're in the position where you can do something, why aren't you? You should. Like, there's no excuse, you know, why you can't. You yeah. don't have to give every single dollar that's in your paycheck. Obviously, take care of you. You come first, but whatever you're able to do, do something. Whether it's just talking about it with somebody else, yeah. you know, spreading the message, because you may not be the person that, you know, makes the change, but you might, you know, spark the person that can.
You might be the catalyst.
You might be mm-hmm. the catalyst, you know, mm-hmm. the thing that sets it off. So, mm-hmm. you know, every little bit helps,
yeah.
whether it's a conversation or it's reposting something on Instagram or it's passing your email along to somebody else who can do something, because you may not be able to do it, but you're like, you know what? I know somebody else who's actually doing some work. So let me connect you to that person. Like, that's you doing your part. And then you can get back to having a mint mojito on Santa Monica and La Brea.
We have,
you know, at on brunch. A Sunday at brunch.
At brunch.
You know, do you, honey, do all of that. But, you know, check in on your fam. Yeah. Check in on your family, because not everybody is able to have that privilege. And again, it's also yeah. about recognizing your privilege and recognizing that, yes, we are queer in the U.S. and there's a lot of rights that are being rolled back. It's not to ignore those things, but it's a matter of putting things in perspective. Because
mm-hmm.
I have privilege. We all have privilege. Even me being a masculine-centered Black lesbian, I have privilege that I'm able to exist the way that I'm existing mm-hmm. and walk down the street and, you know, be greeted and not have to worry about certain things. That's a privilege.
Yeah.
And so I recognize that, and I see that with that privilege, I can do something. You know, like me being able to go to Uganda and have the experiences that I had, even with all the stuff that went down, and be able to come back and still live openly. That's a privilege. You got a lot of people who I'm pretty sure would wish mm-hmm. they could get on a plane, a one-way ticket to anywhere else in the world where they don't have to worry about having stones thrown at them. And that's yeah. not even a dramatic statement. That's a reality for a lot of these people. So mm-hmm. it's recognizing that and seeing like, okay, there's something I can do. And if there's something that I can do, I got to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think right now we see glimpses
yeah.
of what our lives could be.
Right.
If things keep going the way they're going.
Right.
But some people are already there and have been there
mm-hmm. right.
for so many years.
Right.
And it's an everyday struggle that it's not like, oh, this week was bad, but mm-hmm. then no, it's every like day. Every single day
yeah.
there are threats and you can die.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, again, I think it's because it's really easy, not easy, but, you know, simple to write a check.
Mm-hmm.
But you took like you took that extra
yeah.
step.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to really just go there.
Yeah.
And connect
mm-hmm.
with the people and the culture mm-hmm. and really experience it for yourself.
It was great. It was great. I went, there was a, I think it was the first Saturday that I got there. Me and Jay went to barbecue. And she said, you know, I'm going to a barbecue with my ex-girlfriend, so I hope that's okay. I'm like, Jay, that's fine. Like, that's not an issue. And I just remember getting there and, like, it was weird because seeing, like, obviously, like, I've been around queer people, obviously. But to see it, you know, in that way, you know, especially given the reason why I'm there and seeing them barbecue and chill and listen to music and, you know, drink and just live, knowing that literally surrounding them are people who want them dead. Literally. Like, I remember there were these kids who would stand outside the gate and just stare and look at us. And then they'd come back and then they'd have like adults who were staring and looking. And then they would come back and it would happen like often. And I remember talking to one of the girls, like, is this normal? And they're like, yeah, it happens all the time. Like, I was like, well, how do you combat that? She's like, well, you just have to ignore it. Like, there's nothing I can do. Because if I try and say something, then my life is going to be more in danger. So all I can do is just continue to do what I'm doing, go out and live my life. But it was just nice to be in that space and be in a community a positive space. It was like a break. It was like, okay, all right, I don't have to be on guard. I don't have to make sure that I'm talking to the right officer or talking to the right person, that I, you know, behave in a certain way that doesn't, you know, offend anybody. I can literally talk about gay shit and just do what I want to do and twerk if I want to twerk and do whatever and not have to worry about that. So that was one of the like insane highlights of the trip, was just being able to just chill with people all day and like have a drink and just not do anything special, because it wasn't a matter of like, oh, we're doing this intense project program. No, we're just, this is this, if I was in LA, if I was in Long Beach and we're just chilling. And it was also a reminder that these people do exist, mm-hmm. that they're here. They're not just in California. They're not just in the United States or, you know, wherever is popular to show. They're here and they're living and they're existing. So they're family. So therefore I need to do something about it. So, yeah.
Amazing.
And earlier, you were asking about the fabrics and the choice of fabrics. And I was talking a little bit about this, and to listen to Kat talking about it, I just wanted to loop back to that, because we just talked about a lot of negativity. We talked a lot about of unsafe space, a lot of shame, where you're not allowed to be proud. You're not allowed to be yourself. And you were saying it's easy, and respectful to write a check. But the fact that we do use African prints and that we do give value and credit to where it comes from, and that it shines this light and it's attached to this message, to me, it feels like a positive way. I mean, I imagine them getting that check that Kat writes, but knowing, oh, this doesn't, and there's nothing wrong with charity work. This is absolutely not what I'm trying to say. But I imagine myself in their position and be, this is not just charity. This is, it comes from something beautiful that is ours and it mm-hmm. is being celebrated. Mm-hmm. So that's also, and a big part of why we use African prints, to remind you, yes, it's okay to be you. Yes, we are giving this because we want to incentivize and motivate to be you. And because you are beautiful and because you are worthy and because you are so rich and precious and coming from a positive, it comes from a beautiful garment made with your beautiful colors, made by you and your community and used by people that are your community. And all that is really positive and it makes me smile. And I just love that part. And yeah. I know that it feels good to them to not be just that grim image, because it is true. It is, that's a true image, but they are also in barbecues mm-hmm. and they also are pride people, as we all are. And it's just a reminder, a positive reminder. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And you had an event in June, which was to benefit HRI and to present your collection book of purchase. Happy. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, it's a celebration. It's informative. Yeah. You know, you want people to know what's going on. But behind all of that, like Shiva said, it's a celebration. You know, it's saying, listen, there's a lot of stuff that's going on that's not okay. But we're doing everything that we can to change that. But let's celebrate the beauty of it. Let's celebrate the positivity. Because a lot of times, you see the sad clips. you know, with the somber music. And it's just very, like, you feel sad while you're purchasing whatever it is you want to purchase. I don't want you to feel sad while you purchase one of my shirts or, like, a jacket. I want you to feel happy. I want you to feel excited. I want you to feel proud to wear it. Not like, oh, okay, yeah, I had to get it because, like, oh, my God, look what's going on. Like, damn, no, I don't, don't put that on me. I don't want to evoke that feeling out of you at all. I want you to be like, yeah, like, okay, I purchased this. It's from so-and-so. It's made by so-and-so. This is where it came from. It's super dope. And this is what they're doing.
To you be know? Happy about it. To be like, yeah. Not, oh, I got this to help the poor little souls. But no, look, well, this is what they make.
Right. And I think it's also, it's representing, not representing, but I don't want people to look at them like they're some sad, sappy, pathetic, poor little human beings.
Yeah.
They're just like, they're literally just like me and you. Mm-hmm. Like, they're like everybody here. So it's also changing the way people see other people outside of the US, because I feel like a lot of people's perception about any kind of global change or global issue is like they're less than, mm-hmm. or like they're this, oh my God, look at them, like what's going on? Like, no. That's insulting. It's disrespectful, and I'm not gonna stand for it. So I'm not going to shine a light in that way. It's gonna be informative. You're gonna know this is what's going on, and this is the change that needs to happen, but it's not going to be a sad and pathetic and like, oh, poor, poor, poor soul kind of thing. It's a celebration. So,
yes.
While putting in that
celebrate.
Work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Celebrate. Celebrate. Okay. There's no song coming from that. I'm sorry. I thought
hey, you
it
can
was.
Sing. You can sing. We put a microphone in front of you.
You know, I can hit some runs real quick.
Mm-hmm. Don't tempt her. Don't encourage it.
Whatever. I can do it.
Do you want to plug where people can find you?
Oh my God,
how
yes.
they can be a part of.
I'm all about the plug.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know.
Plug.
Okay. Plug. Yes. So bynicolewilson.com. So I will spell that out. It's bynicole wilson.com. And then that same By Nicole Wilson is also my Instagram name. I'm trying to think. Is there anything else? I think that's it.
You could tell them what we're going to be soon. In a couple
oh,
weeks.
Yeah. Where are we going to be?
We're going to Dapper Q's, the second show that we're going to participate yes. with them. It's at the Brooklyn Museum, which we're really happy to be in that space. And they do this fabulous event every year, where they invite designers from all across the country,
specifically
queer designers. Yeah. And there's we have a runway show, and everybody gets to showcase their collection, their looks, and have a platform to show their stuff and what they're about. And it's a fabulous queer event.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's always a lot of fun. It's always great to mingle with people like-minded and open-minded. And there's not a lot of events like that. And it's very, I think it's queer, but mainly lesbian, I would say. There's a lot of women. And that's something that there's even less, I think. And so,
yeah,
I think it's great.
Yeah, there's not a lot of, like, you don't really see, I mean, there's queer people like are all up and through fashion.
Mm. Yes.
Like there's no way you can separate queer folk from design, art in general, and fashion specifically. But as far as naming those designers, you know, who are starting out or who have been in the game for a long time, but just haven't gotten that recognition that they deserve. It's nice to see that the Dapper Q is doing that and saying like, hey, I see you guys. I recognize what you're doing. I think you deserve to be celebrated and highlighted. So mm-hmm. here's an opportunity to showcase your collection. And it's really cool because it will be 9 designers. So we're one of 9 designers that will be showcasing. And, you know, there's a lot of press that comes from that. And so I think that's really cool because then it's like, not only are we just doing the show for people who want to show up to the museum and see designers, but it's exposure. You know, it's getting your stuff out there to like Huffington Post or to NBC or to Nylon or all of these, you know, different outlets, so that other people can see what it is that you're about. Because it's really hard to kind of break in, quote unquote, to, you know, the fashion industry and get people to notice you and to see what you're about and to take you seriously. And you know, to have them see you as like, not a credible designer, but like, I'm a designer and this is what I do and this is my business. And this isn't just like, oh, I'm selling shirts out of my truck. Not there's anything wrong with that. But depending on what you're doing, if you're a designer and you're trying to, you know, create a collection and you're at that level, then there's a certain level of respect that you deserve. And I think it's important that, you know, all queer designers get that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that's really cool that Dapper Q was doing that. So
and this happened really excited during New York Fashion Week.
Yes. So our show is on September 6th. Fashion Week is that week. So it's going to be pretty hectic. Last year it was on the 12th. Mm. So it was during Fashion Week, but it was like near the end.
Got it.
It was like literally like very end of Fashion Week. So I think I'm excited for like what the energy is going to look like and feel like this time around, like being smack dab in the middle, mm-hmm. and, you know, seeing the hustle and bustle of everybody else around you and seeing like what they're doing. And yeah, I love New York in general. So I'm just excited to go back and see it.
Yeah, you talk a little bit about press and you've had mm-hmm. some great mm-hmm. mentions from NBC News and Huffington Post and Nylon. But I think a really great shout out that you got mm-hmm. was in Vanity Fair from Lena Waithe.
Yeah.
Who has worn your pieces.
Oh my goodness. Lena Waithe is she's so awesome. Like what she does for the queer community as a whole is just amazing. And it's not even like, I don't think she's doing anything special. I think she's literally just existing and doing the work that she wants to do. And in doing that, you are doing a great service to the community. Also, like I said, like as far as like connections go, it's really hard to make those connections. And so for myself, I just reached out to her on Instagram. I literally just like I DM'd her. And I remember that day because I was I remember that day because I was at the airport picking up Shiva. Yes. I was super nervous and I was like, I was nervous about that. You know, like I was excited to see you and all that. Oh, but anyway, just plug that in there real quick.
Thank you.
But I was like, you know what? Like I want to see like how many connections can I get, like, or can I get any connections and like have, you know, someone of some status, you know, wear my stuff, and just know what it is that I'm doing and be able to support any way they can. And so, I reached out, sent her a message and I said, hey Lena, you know, like I appreciate the work that you're doing in the community and how you're telling these stories for, you know, queer women and just queer people in general. And I would love to be able to send you something, you know, if you were open to it. And, again, I was like, oh, she's probably not going to respond. You know, like anybody that has like a blue check next to their name, I'm kind of like, I'm taking a gamble that they're going to respond to what I have to say. But she responded and she was like, thank you so much. Like, you know, it was a general response. You know, she's like, thank you so much. Like, I appreciate it. You know, reach out to my, you know, my assistant. And, you know, we can go from there. So it was a lot of back and forth. But then myself and Shiva were actually able to meet her and do a fitting for another piece that she was interested in having for another event. And she's a really, really, really sweet person.
She's awesome.
She's so sweet. Like, she's very humble. You know, like, the personality that you see on TV is exactly, like, what she is in real life. Which is refreshing because a lot of times, you know... You know, you get really disappointed when you see somebody you look up to, you meet them, and they're completely different. It's like, damn, well, let's just erase this memory, and I'll just stick to what I saw on TV.
That's right.
Because that was golden. That was pure. This is not. But with Lena, it was awesome. Like, she was super fucking sweet. She was just awesome.
I think that's her power in general. And I kind of told her that when we met. I try not to have a freak out. And I did a little disclaimer before I did my little speech. I said, I'm not a stalker. I'm not going to go crazy and start like high pitching craze right now. But I think the beauty of what she does is that it's not gimmicky. It's not, she's just really being herself.
Yeah.
And I think we come to a point of we tired of having to explain how we different, regardless of what is our difference. So earlier we were talking about different body types, different personalities. I personally, I don't know if it's because I'm over 30 and I'm over it. I don't know. I don't know, it's because I traveled a lot, and you realize everybody always has a problem. And so there's a moment where you know what? I'm tired to explain. I don't want to explain. If you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. And I think that's the beauty of what she does. It's not in your face. It's not daring, which is okay to do. But it's just, this is me. This is who I am. Yeah. Unedited. And that's it. Mm-hmm. And it's really refreshing to see that. Mm-hmm. And especially, you know, I really respect people. I'm queer, but I don't think I get the same experience from the public that people like Kat do or like Lena does. And I told her that when I met her. There is a certain bravery, and unfortunately it is a bravery, but it's a certain bravery of going out to the world bareface with everything on show. And people don't notice me. I mean, they notice the red hair, but that's about it. But to have that and to go and to brave it and open.
Maybe the blue lipstick.
Maybe the blue lipstick.
That might be.
But to go out in the world and to be just you and be brave and unapologetic about it, I just think it's fabulous. And not having to do a disclaimer, not having to explain, and just be as simple and as pure as possible. I think we need more people like that.
So she's awesome. She's awesome. And so when I got the magazine Vanity Fair, I saw her on the cover, and I remember you told me about it the night before. And I read it when I was in my office, and it's a great article in general. Mm-hmm. It's just a really great, it's an amazing article. And then the interviewer was just talking about, you know, like her collection of Jordans and Nikes and her shoes. And then it started to talk about her fashion. And then she, you know, mentioned off the top, you know, like these three designers that she likes. And I just remember like seeing that. I'm like, that's me.
Yeah.
That's me. It's still crazy. Like, it's not, I don't know. It's like, it's one of those like accomplishments that I didn't think I would get. Like, obviously, like I would want some acknowledgement like that. I think everybody would, but to be able to see that, you know, and she didn't have to mention me. Mm-hmm. She didn't have to say like, yeah, you know, there's these queer designers that I like, and then that's that. Or she could just say like, yeah, you know, I love fashion, and leave it at that. Yeah. But the fact that she purposely decided to, you know, give a shout out to these queer designers and say like, hey, you know, like these are the queer designers that I rock with and that, you know, I wear their stuff, is really, really awesome. And it just felt like another like notch on her belt as far as like supporting the community.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I know when it comes to wearing a lot of like going to a lot of different events, you know, she will definitely reach out and be like, hey, Kat, you know, like this is what I'm trying to do. Like, do you have something for me? And sometimes I will, sometimes I won't. And I remember another thing that I had no idea that she was even going to do it. She was a guest on Comedy Central, Trevor Noah. What's the name of that show again?
Daily Show
with Trevor Noah. And she wore my coat. My Bogolanfini coat. And I was like, yo!
I just remember seeing a picture, and it's a picture taken from the back, and you can see them half profile, and you can see the crowd. And I was like, oh my days, I've done that in our kitchen table.
Yeah, literally, she sewed that coat.
I sewed that in my kitchen table.
Yeah, the kitchen table.
And that's awesome.
Like, yeah.
I was like,
and it's on national television.
And she was wearing it, and I love The Daily Show. Mm-hmm. And, he was touching he had his hand on her shoulder, touching my skin.
You practically met Trevor Noah that
basically.
One degree of separation.
We touched each other. Yeah.
I touched that thread at 2 o'clock in the morning. He touched it. So I was on a date with both of them at 3 o'clock in the morning. Basically. They were having dinner with me there at my table. That's how I see it.
So that's just,
that's incredible.
That's really awesome. That's another thing. Like the fact that like this stuff is made like literally in the kitchen on our table with little sewing machine and what tools we have. Like, that's what makes it even more special. Like, if it came from, you know, a high-end manufacturer, okay, cool. But like, there's just a certain level of like, it just makes it special.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that, you know, I had to come home from work and, you know, paste together some patterns and figure out how to do that, because I didn't know how to do that at one point, or learn how to sketch and chalk an outline for a pattern and make sure I'm not cutting the pattern the wrong way and pinning and all of these things. And then you see it come together, and then you have a celebrity be like, I want that, you know, or you see it on television, or it gets a mention in a magazine. Like, it's like it's another level of hard work. And you know, major shout out to you, Shiva, you know, you're the one making this. So
thank you.
Major shout out to you. Cause I know it's not easy. I know you're talented at it, but it's not easy. So yeah,
it takes a bit. You imagine when you see it coming in the runway last year to see the pieces coming through and thinking, you know, you have some fantastic designers and you have people with different budgets, different means, people that studied for it, a lot of tailoring and suits and impeccable garments. And you're self-taught and you're self-driven and you starting up and you see your things coming up the runway and they look so nice and beautiful and people give you great feedback and they like it and still remaining personal. It just feels... Yeah, fabulous.
Yeah.
It really feels good.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Very much.
Yes, thank you.
Well, thank
this
you
really
guys.
Has been an incredible interview.
This was really fun.
Really inspiring.
Thank you very much.
I know you and we have many conversations.
Frankie.
But I my first time meeting Shiva.
Yeah. This is Frankie. I told her.
It just clicked.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you were that Frankie.
That
this
Frankie.
Is Frankie.
Oh, Frankie, I know you. We humble. You're like, I know your office, how it looks like. I know your wall. I know we had a whole discussion about some of the art that you had on your wall. Like,
great.
We tight. We close.
But I know that we're really lucky to have had. Have you sit with us today?
Yeah, thank you.
And really have this
thank
discussion.
You very much.
The door is always open for you today. And thank you.
Thank you, Frankie. Thank you, Frankie. Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you, Kitty Cat.
I love you.
Thank you for caring.
Yeah.
I think you guys, I don't know if this is going to go in the edits or not, but it's on record now. But thank you for caring.
Because
you grown people that have a life and have a lot of things to do and a lot of ideas, but to care and to create space. Not only for yourselves, as we discussed at the beginning, but create space for others and giving voice and to you and to others and to going through the trouble. And you could be laying on the beach right now, sipping on that mint mojito. And you're here.
Could be.
You could be. Probably will be still.
That's a strong
That's
possibility.
For later. Yeah. Watch a nice sunset. Yeah.
You know.
No, but thank you. Because it's easy to look the other way. It's easy not to care. And you wouldn't be bad people for it. But thank you. Like, really mean it. For real.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, guys, that's it for this week. Thank you for listening to our podcast. Make sure to rate us and leave a comment. We hope you guys come back next week. But in the meantime, you can go to our website at cheatdaypodcast.com and you can find us on Twitter and the Insta at Cheat Day Podcast.